time to listen to the interviews for Island Life on Saturday, the 21st of January, 2011. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them at Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday, the 21st of January, Emma Boa Warner talked to Drama Ability teacher Cindy Peterkin. She talked to the gardener James from Greenspace Landscape Company. She spoke to David Basham about stuttering, and she talked to artist Clyde Scott.
And I'm joined in the studio by Cindy P, Mrs. PK, or Mrs. Bouquet, as I'm going to start calling her now.
Morning,
hi,
Emma.
Cindy.
Morning, Emma.
So, you do the Dramability courses on the island, don't you?
Yep, I run Dramability courses at Artworks, which are lessons, drama lessons for both children and adults, and they're after school and during term time. But this venture at the moment that I'm doing right now, I foolishly said, yes, I'll spend my summer holidays doing that. Oh, yippee! But it's actually good fun, really. I'm doing the three-week Artworks Youth Theatre, which is the third year it's run, mm-hmm. and each year they ask somebody different to run and direct it. So this year I'm doing it for 3 weeks, and there are 20 students, and I think we're having great fun. There's two of them in the studio, which we'll tell you if they are later. But it's nice because I've actually know quite a few of them already because they've done Dramability classes before with
right.
me. So that's been really nice that I know them already, or a number of them.
But they're not, the course isn't limited to that though, is it? You've got some children that, or some students, some drama mm-hmm. students mm-hmm. that haven't done that before.
Yep, there's lots that have come onto this 3 week summer holiday course that haven't done Dramability with me. Some of them, in fact, quite a few, have done all
bits.
Of the other
right.
youth theatre, and some of them have done nothing at all before.
Oh, how exciting. Yeah. So a great mix of kids and ability. Mm. And before we go into that, let's talk a little bit more about the Dramability as a whole. How does that run?
Well, it's set up as an after-school programme. And it's, well, I started last term to go all the way down to age 5. Originally, I started age 7.
So you've got different groups.
Yep,
just
different
to tell
groups.
People that don't
different
know.
Different groups. So on a Tuesday afternoon after school, I have different groups at different times according to their age group. And the more children I have, the less ages I have in one class. So I have age 5 and 6, for instance, at 3:30. And then it goes through the afternoon. And they commit for the term so that I can focus for the term on specific different things. Like one term we mainly did mask work. Another term, last term, we had a fairly silly term by them doing an alternative pantomime for the older group.
Oh, great.
That was quite good fun, but less sort of directed. Another term we did monologues and choral speaking. So it's a different focus each term, but they don't have to have done anything before, but some of them might have done things before. And it just so happens that I know some of them from Dramability that are also doing the youth theatre.
The summer course.
Which is great,
right.
which is the summer course.
And are the adult courses still going?
Oh, yes. The adult courses are booming.
Are they?
No, I'm very excited because I applied for some Creative Communities funding.
That's right.
And got some, which was very exciting because the first of those starts with the Shakespeare this coming term in February. So that starts Thursday, February the 10th.
Uh-huh.
And the adults are, it's a smaller group usually, sort of around 10 in the group.
Mm.
And it's been people who have done nothing before at all. And the exciting thing is it's people who say, oh, I haven't done anything since primary school and I just thought I'd give it a go. The first term we just did lessons and exercises and got them understanding how to create a character, stagecraft generally. And then the second term we put on the Pinter review sketches, which again I chose because they were two-handers and short, few minutes each scene, so it was manageable and they felt they could cope with it. And in the same way, well, we did the Christmas Carol in December.
Yes, yes.
So Christmas Carol, which was a reading rather than a learnt thing, so that they could show enough, but we only have 10 weeks to do it in and they meet
absolutely.
Just once a week.
Yeah.
So we can't do a huge full-scale production with that. So I have to think how I'm going to get. It's 2 hours, an hour and a half or 2 hours, depending on what I'm doing, on a Thursday evening for the adults.
Right.
So this term we're doing some Shakespeare, but it's not Shakespeare as in approaching just a whole play, because I want people who've probably been scared by it in the future to feel that they can approach it and have fun with it. And by having a little bit of money from the Creative Communities funding means that I've been able to get Paolo Rotondo on board, who's an actor.
Yes.
Who's done lots of physical devised work.
He has.
But he's also spent some time at the Globe, doing some Shakespeare at the Globe. So what's exciting about him is that working with me means he'll have quite a physical approach to it. And I really hope that we're going to do scenes and we're going to look at Shakespeare and love scenes, and we're going to look at Shakespeare's own life and his loves, and then pull out different scenes from different plays that explores a variety of love, whether it's, you know, an older love or a sibling love and rivalry, or Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, right down to the young lovers in A Midsummer Night's Dream. So there should be something for everybody. Until I know who signs up, I don't know exactly which scenes.
Of course, yeah, you're going to
But it should be manageable.
That sounds like such fun. That sounds really good.
I'm very excited about that one. And I've already got a couple of people that are different, that that haven't done the others, the other courses, who thought, oh, I'd quite like to have a go at Shakespeare, but I'd be far too scared to do a whole play. So it'll be nice as well, because in the future I might do a Shakespeare, an outdoor
outdoor
one, and it means that they can have a go at it, and I can see who likes it, with a view to possibly doing something in the future as well.
That sounds great. Mm. And how would they get in touch with you for that?
That's contacting me directly, which is either my phone number's 372-2770, or they can email me on l.peterkin@extra.co.nz. My drama, it says in the Gulf News every week, it says Dramability, and it's got my phone number.
Absolutely.
Dramability, yeah. Drama classes.
And also you can contact you through the Artworks
or
website.
Through Artworks.
If you can't
website.
Remember any of that, go onto the website and check out the contact details there. That's
and
great.
So if they look up Dramability in a newspaper or ask for the Dramability number, that's me for adults or children.
Brilliant. Okay, so let's go back and talk about this production that you're about to do now. And we've got a couple of your actors dancing for us in the background. Hello, Tat, and hello, Sawney.
Hello.
Hello.
So I want to hear, what's this production about then, guys? You talk, you come near the microphone.
It's about this boy named Ernie and his illusions.
Well, yeah, they're more than illusions. They're basically hallucinations.
Right.
Like hallucinations, but they're called hallucinations.
Right. Okay, so I presume he's not taken drugs or anything, has he? He's not had an accident.
No, he's just a boy with a wild imagination. He imagines stuff and it basically happens.
Oh.
And he gets his family in trouble quite a lot of the time.
He gets his family in trouble? How does he do that?
Well, he imagines these crazy, wild ideas.
Come near the mic. That's good. Yeah.
Like, say, he's reading a book and he imagines that a great big army comes marching through the house.
Or, like, he could be reading a book about dragons and imagine a dragon come and burn the house down or something like that. Crazy stuff like that. But, yeah, it's quite an enjoyful play for all ages, like, I guess.
So what age are the kids that are in it, guys?
Well, the youngest one is about 8, my sister, but the oldest one's nearly 14.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a good age group. How many kids are in the show?
20.
20 kids. Wow. So, okay, when is it? How do we get to come and see it, guys? Tell us about it.
Well, the first show is on Saturday at 7 o'clock. Friday the 28th of January at 7 p.m. and Saturday the 29th at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. And also one show on Sunday at 2 p.m.
Great. And that's at the Artworks?
Yes.
So how do we get... How much are tickets?
So for children, it's $5. Adults, $10. And you can get a family ticket for $25.
Great. Okay, so, all right, so we've got the business bit out of the way. Now tell me, has it been fun?
Yes, I would say so, yes.
Definitely.
Would you recommend it for more kids next year? What do you think?
Yeah, every year's a blast and it's always something different, never the same. It's what first year was a musical, last year was a play completely made up by the cast, and this year it's a play by a man who, Alan April, who, yeah, was made ages ago for kids back then.
Oh, so it's an Alan Ayckbourn play. I hadn't clocked that. Oh, fantastic. So lots of fun. Have you all learnt stuff?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, you've learnt stuff and you've had fun. So that's pretty much it then. So was it a good way to spend your summer?
Yeah, it has been. But also another prospect that Cindy's put into the play is that it's a play but with two casts.
Oh, tell me about that. How does that work, Sonny? Or Tat, yeah?
Well, it works since everyone was sort of getting worried about who they're going to play and stuff. Cindy, she decided that maybe we should do two casts so people could get a chance to act the people they want. So what we did, at first we were only going to do three shows,
yeah,
and we have cast A, which has different people cast as different characters than cast B, and cast A will be playing two separate shows than cast B.
So you're taking it in turns.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Fantastic. What a great idea. Well, listen, guys, thank you so much for coming in. It's been brilliant to talk to you, and I wish you all the best, and break a leg, as they say in the biz. Break a leg, sweeties. And I'm sure it'll go really well. Thanks very much for coming in. Thanks a lot, Cindy, as well. And look forward to hearing about your next lot of courses. And I'm very intrigued by the Shakespeare and the love scenes. That sounds great. I'd like to just welcome into the studio again. We've got James talking about our gardening needs. So take it away, James. What's going on with this weather then?
Okay, well, I mean, this time last year we were experiencing a real dry spell, and lots of things were struggling in the dry. But we've got a totally different weather situation this year, and one of the things I thought I'd talk about for this month and possibly next month, depending on whether the weather stays the way it is the just how we cope with disease which is caused by too much rain, humid conditions, warmer temperatures. We do get a really good we have had a really good growth spurt with many plants, or plants that I've been working with lately in the garden. But one of the things that I just thought I'd just point out, there's a few things that we need to think about when we're in the garden, and that's looking at basically with perennial plants that you obviously you want to keep those plants free of as much moisture as possible, especially around the base of the plants.
So are those your plants possibly in boxes or sort of in your flower beds on the edges?
Well, for example, if you've got lavender at the moment,
yeah,
you'll find the lavender's getting quite top heavy with all the water and rain. One of the things that you can do with lavender, because they don't do very well in these conditions, is that you always make sure that they're not covered in mulch. You also make sure that you thin them out on top, just to make sure that they don't get too top heavy and fall over.
Right.
So those sorts of things. And yeah, there are some, I mean, there's quite a few other plants that might be struggling, but one of the things you just need to be aware of is that if you are, for instance, deadheading plants at this time of year, you need to make sure that the weather is dry, so you get a day of wind that can dry out your plants, and never deadhead any plant in the wet, because that always encourages disease.
Oh, I didn't know that. So what, it'll encourage mold or...?
Well, it just, it can encourage certain fungal diseases, but also the cuts that you make into plants and trees can cause can encourage bugs to burrow in, because this is the time of year that bugs are at their most prevalent. So
right,
you might notice down the bottom of your garden that you get bitten quite a bit, and the mosquitoes are out, those sorts of things. But more plants, bugs to do with the actual plants, you just need to be aware of that deadheading and that sort of weather just doesn't help. So really those sorts of things. So cleaning around the base of plants, making sure that your plants are not covered in things like mulch, removing dead leaves.
So when you say cleaning, you literally mean just sort of removing any of the debris?
Yeah, right. Basically just making sure that that they're not they haven't got mulch up and in around the base of the trunk of the tree or the stem, and that's really just to make sure that you don't get things like crown rot, which are things that can develop in your plants at this time of year and in these type of conditions.
The humidity, the wet and the humidity.
Yep. So there is that temptation too to keep watering your plants as well, especially in these conditions, and that's probably not a good idea, especially with your perennials, sorts of plants.
What about plants that you've just potted that you've got in big pots? Would you say water them, or would you say that there's enough natural moisture in the air and with the rain?
I think you know, pot plants are a bit different because they sometimes sit underneath eaves of houses and those sorts of things. So it really depends on the type of plant that you've got. But I always tend to stick my pot plants out in the rain, and then I bring them back under or inside the house when it's stopped raining. But if you've got plants like succulents and those sorts of things in your pot plants, then I wouldn't worry too much. But it's more of your dry weather plants. And you can always tell the difference. Dry weather plants, meaning plants of a sort of a lighter grey, sort of a lighter leaf, the types that might have a bit more wood in them, and so forth.
For instance, I just potted last weekend some Strelitzia into three big massive buckets, and we hope they're going to grow, pot buckets. Mm-hmm. What should I still be watering them, or?
Well, you can probably. I mean, on the brighter side, there is a slight. There's a more of an opportunity to actually plant at this time of year. So, certainly, a Strelitzia you could plant quite happily at this time of year, and as long as you're watering it in. So, in terms of plant establishment, you could get away with a few cheeky plantings.
Right.
And as where last year you couldn't, you know,
yeah,
it was
absolutely
too dry, and everybody was looking at their tanks and worrying. So so the other thing too, that in terms of disease, I've picked out one disease that seems to be a bit of a problem, especially in this type of conditions, is powdery mildew. And
horrible, isn't it?
It is. It's not fatal to plants, but what it does is it actually reduces the flavour of fruiting. It can stop your plant budding, and it doesn't look very nice either on your plants. So I've got a little remedy here that I've managed to pick up from some of my notes that I've taken.
Well, good. Go on then. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, no. So powdery mildew is those white or grey splotches on leaves or your stems, and as I said, it sort of weakens the plant, it stresses the plants out, and it diminishes the fruit flavour. So, if you were to take 1 litre of water and 1 cup of milk, and add that together, and then to mix it with 1 teaspoon of baking soda, you'll get a concoction that should remedy or reduce that problem. Because what I'm really, really passionate about is actually when you're spraying, that you're using, you know, you're not using the synthetic sprays, you're actually using sort of a natural remedy, or trying to use natural remedy, especially on your edibles as well.
Is that what you do? You try to use the natural rather than the chemicals?
Well, if there's an opportunity to, then I really, really like to encourage that.
Okay, so just repeat that remedy briefly again.
Oh, okay, it's very simple. 1 litre of water with 1 cup of milk and 1 teaspoon of baking soda, and you mix that together and make sure it's well mixed, and you could put it into a little spray bottle, or you could, it's probably not best to douse the plant in it, so I'd probably make sure that it's some sort of a light spray can, and I think that will do the trick.
Oh, excellent. And would you spray that directly all over the plant, or just where the mildewy bit is?
You could, I'd try and do the whole plant and make sure that you go under the leaves as well as on top.
Ah, yeah, of course, because that's often where the mildewy bit starts and Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that sounds great. Thanks very much, James.
No problem.
Anything else, or is that it? We're going to end with our recipe of the day, are we?
Recipe of the day? No, well, I've got plant of the month.
Oh, yes.
Because we only meet once a month,
we do,
don't we?
We so, do. Yeah, well, on air we do, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Okay, yes, of course. Well, let's go for plant of the month. I wasn't sure whether we'd got that in for today.
Okay.
Great.
Well, I mean, this is a plant that I've used quite a lot with working in different parts of the island. It loves the dry. It seems to love the wet as well. And I think a lot of people have a real like for grasses, and the Carex grasses do look lovely, but they're not very suited to these conditions, the hot, humid, those types of conditions. They tend to not have a very long life. So there is a plant, an Australian, called Lamandra tarnica.
Lamandra tarnica.
Tarnica. And this looks like a lush green grass, but in fact it's not. But it has this amazing look. It bushes very well. And it's the other thing about it is, as compared to a Carex sexta, which is very common on the island, which is quite sharp to the touch, this has quite a soft... a soft touch, so you're not going to, if you were to plant it around pathways, it would be,
you're not going to rip your ankles.
No,
or if your kids are running in and out.
Exactly,
yeah.
It's not as cutty, like cutty grass or anything like that.
That's quite nasty.
It is, yeah. The old pampas grass, not very nice. And
yeah,
that sort of thing. Toy.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Okay, so where would we get hold of that then?
This is quite a popular plant, so you could get that from placemakers.
Or any other type of garden centre?
Absolutely.
Okay, or, so just repeat the name for us slow bees.
Lamandra, Lamandra, and then the cultivar is Tarnica, Tanika.
Right, okay, and that's a really good plant, and it likes all sorts of, you know, our clay type soils and stuff. It works well on the island, in your experience.
Absolutely, yeah.
No, great.
It's a good tough competitor.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming in, James. As always, a pleasure to talk to you, and I look forward to what you'll come up with. I think we need to make this a new feature, actually, the recipe of the day, and one of your...
I think that'll be great. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thanks very much for taking time out of your busy weekend to come and talk to us. It's been enjoyable. Thanks.
Okay, no problem.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke People, Events and Issues, brought to you by Island, Art, Craft, Giftware, Clothing and Bric-a-Brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
I'd like to welcome to the studio David. Hi, David.
Hi, great to be here, Emma.
Thank you very much for coming in. I'm just checking the levels there, so sorry if I've blasted anybody's eardrums. We had an interesting conversation this week about the movie that I'm going to be reviewing next week, which prompted David to offer to come in and chat with me. He emailed me and offered to come in and chat about stuttering. We've been talking about The King's Speech, of course, which is a movie that is having a real media interest, and it's provoking a lot of interesting discussion, isn't it, at the moment?
Yes, it's really been very popular. It's actually got quite a large article in the latest Listener.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I'm reviewing that movie next week on the Anything Arty show. Little plug there for Thursday night at 8 o'clock. If anybody's wanting to listen and hear a review on The King's Speech, I'm going to go and see it in the next couple of nights. Have you seen the movie?
No, I haven't had chance yet.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So obviously the topic is talking about stuttering, and so that's something that's really close to your heart. That topic, isn't it, David?
Oh, very much so. I first developed a stutter. In England they call it stammering. In America and New Zealand they call it stuttering.
So
it's the same thing. It's no different. I was about three, I'm told, and I just developed it. The family had an explanation, but it's one of those, is it all right to call them old wives' tales?
Oh, yeah,
it's
absolutely
one of those urban myth type things.
Yeah.
What had happened was there was a major fire at a factory near where we lived. We lived in Parnell, and the Herds factory was down in Parnell proper. And it caught on fire, and I got very frightened. And the family always said that I started stuttering from that time. That would be untrue. You don't get a stutter from a traumatic event.
Oh, really? Right.
But the strange thing is, they say you can go to bed at night without a stutter and wake up in the morning with a stutter, or you can develop it gradually.
Really? I didn't... I didn't know that at all. I had an uncle, well, I still have him. He used to stutter when he was a young boy, and I remember sort of in teenage years, he was... Because there's not very many years between us. He would have a stutter, but he grew out of it. So is that what happens?
You can grow out of it. Some people do. No one really knows. There's no such thing as a cure.
Right.
You don't actually ever have a cure, but some people grow out of it. You can learn ways of overcoming it. You also can have therapy, which for some people can be absolutely successful. For some,
horrendous.
It just helps people.
Right, right. But for some people, it can be horrendous if they just can't tune into that type of therapy, depending on what type of speech therapy it is. So tell me a bit more about how these things... So they can come on gradually, or literally, you just said you can wake up with it the next day. How does that work? Do you know?
I don't really know, but I've been researching it over the net because I wanted to catch up with what the latest thing that they've been talking about, and the experts say you can literally develop it instantly.
Right.
I seem to have developed it absolutely instantly.
You did,
and that's how they explained it.
Right, that it was linked to a traumatic experience.
Well, they had to have an explanation. Like everyone, we've got to have an explanation for something.
Absolutely.
So the family had an explanation that because of the fire, I started stuttering.
Okay,
but that's not true. There's people have asked questions like, my son or daughter has been bitten by a dog and they've started to stutter. Would that be related? And it isn't. It's just a coincidence.
Right.
But we like to have an explanation.
Of course we do. We're
just
human.
Don't like to think our kids suddenly have got this defect.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about how your experiences with this. So you're saying that you started when you were about three. So up until then, you had perfectly normal language and speech development, did you?
Yes, as far as I'm aware, everything was fine.
Right.
And then at about three or four, and that's common.
Okay, that's a common time, is it?
I did what people would say you'd normally do. Three or four, and... It's mainly boys.
Oh,
very few girls stutter.
Right.
And if they do, they seem to get over it quite quickly.
Right.
I cannot recall any woman that I've met that stutters. I've met lots of guys that stutter, but I haven't met a woman myself that stutter.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting in itself.
Yeah, and I don't know why. There's a lot of things I just don't know.
It's unexplained as yet. So let's draw it back to your own experiences. So you started stuttering, and do you remember that? I mean, are you conscious of being aware of it as a young child?
I can remember my brothers and sisters correcting me.
People
have been
quite
very
hard.
Very good at that, and they were adults. I mean, I was quite very young in the family,
right?
And I remember at school trying to ask about a jumper, a sweater that I'd lost, and I just couldn't get it all out. It was hopeless. So I do remember, probably start remembering about four
okay.
or five. I remember struggling, and I remember people either correcting me or trying to finish what I said.
And which was the best way for you? Was it having people support you and correct you? Sometimes people just tend to, they don't know what to do, they ignore it and just let you carry on, or what? What's the best?
Well, I think the best thing to do is let the person finish. It'd drive me crazy if you correct me or you try and finish what I say or mimic me, even today. It's fatal if you mimic me. I still can't go, oh, that's okay.
No.
I still go, oh, that's funny. Gosh,
yeah, absolutely,
and
yeah.
Look, I'm laughing at it.
Yeah, laughing so much.
Because some people will do it. They think it's funny, but it's not.
No, absolutely not. No, it's quite cruel. And, of course, I'm sure you experienced some teasing as a child, did you?
Oh, lots. And you, what you do is the worst thing you have is a teacher asks you a question. I used to be terrified.
Oh, what a
and
shame.
I'm sure it had a lot to do with my learning at school. I hated school.
Well, yeah.
When I was young.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just so hard.
I would imagine it would be quite a traumatic experience for a young child to be having such such a disability and then to have it exposed constantly, or the fear of having it exposed by literally just being asked a question by the teacher. That must have been really hard. So tell me about some of the strategies. What did your family do? Did they seek some help, or did they attempt to help you themselves, or was it just brushed under the carpet?
Well, I think we're talking about, so I was born in 45.
Right.
So we're talking about the 50s.
Yep.
The late 40s, 50s, there was nothing.
Right.
You just got on with it.
Right.
I think everyone just ignored it. Probably mum and dad were lovely. They would have just said, look, just he'll grow out of it. That would have been their explanation, I think.
Yeah.
I actually never talked to mum and dad about it. That's one thing. I talked to mum about lots of things when she was older, but I didn't talk to her about that. But I do remember my brothers and sisters teasing me. I can remember it as plain as day.
Mm.
And that brother's still alive. I've never mentioned it to him, but I think next time I might.
You might address that situation with him.
Well, it's just, I don't think they were, I don't know. People just, they think it's funny.
Well, I guess it's, people try to see the funny side of things that they can't really explain, and kids in particular can be cruel, can't they, without any understanding of the consequences. Like, for instance, you saying, you know, you still remember it to this day. So you didn't have any speech therapy or anything like that?
There was nothing available.
So how long did it continue? Because obviously, we're talking now, you host a radio show for us, you're one of our hosts, you're obviously a very successful person now, and you don't have any semblance of a stutter / stammer left. What did you do? Did it just go away on its own?
No, it didn't go away on its own, and it's very funny. I actually fixed myself.
Right.
And it was rather an interesting way, and it was one of those things. Now, I'm a teenage boy. And what are teenage boys interested in?
Girls.
And it was the school ball. And I have to be careful because I did a Toastmasters competition speech about this. So I'll be careful not to slip into the speech because I know it so well.
It's
and
interesting.
What happened was there was a girl I really wanted to ask. And I would practice at night how to ask it. That's how bad it was.
Really?
I practiced and practiced and practiced so I could get it out. And then when the time came, complete blank.
Oh.
Nothing. In fact, I don't even think she noticed.
Really?
So that was just
heartbreaking.
Absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But I seemed to take that as a bit of a challenge. Because I remember being very angry with myself.
Right.
And I would have been 15, I suppose. So I was starting to get weary with being corrected. And I was starting to speak up for myself. So what I did was I went home and I tried to work out why I did it. And this explanation is not the correct one, but it's one that worked for me.
Absolutely.
And what I was doing was, because I was worried about stuttering, I'd bank up the words in my head about what I was going to say, so I'd practice everything.
Right.
So I've got a good memory for words.
Okay, should have been an actor.
And I would be able to put all these words together and remember what I was going to say, and I'd rehearse them. But then when it came to saying them, it would come out an enormous rush.
Right.
Because I'd be so anxious about getting it out.
Yep.
And then I'd stutter. Now, that was my explanation. Probably not correct.
But that's how you rationalized it inside your own head as a 15-year-old boy.
That's how I thought I did it.
Mm.
It isn't that way, but it didn't matter for me. Because what I then decided to do was to slow down and not keep too many words in my head. But it got a bit tricky sometimes because you'd run out of words. But I literally started to speak really slowly.
And that did it for you.
And that seemed to have helped me. The other thing I did was I thought, what will I do? I'll try and talk in front of people. I'll try and get up on
that
stage.
That is so brave. I've got to say, that is if somebody that suffers from a stutter to actually try and treat themselves by forcing themselves to speak in public, which, let's be honest, is difficult for anybody, whether they are a great orator or not, to get up and speak in public is always a nerve-wracking experience.
Well, what happened was every morning we had assembly, and every morning they had a Bible reading. Now, I wasn't anything like a Christian, but I thought, well, I'll do that. So I took the Bible home at the Christmas holidays and practiced, and everyone used to laugh because nobody ever had to do a reading from the Bible ever again for the rest of the year because nobody wanted to do it, so I volunteered. I struggled. But it was always short.
Right.
It was at school. And also, nobody else wanted to do it. So if anyone criticised me, my answer was, well, you do it. Here's the Bible.
Mm.
No one did it. Because I got very upset with people who would criticise me. I had teachers who got me to neigh like a horse because I could stutter over the letter N.
Oh, really?
I've had some awful things. You go into a shop and ask for a Dairy Milk chocolate. D's were hopeless.
Right.
Absolutely hopeless. D's were really hard. My name's David, but I learned a trick. If you said, what's your name? I'd say, my name is David, and I wouldn't stutter.
Right.
But I would stutter saying mum, but I wouldn't stutter with my. So I actually practiced all sorts of things.
Right. That's quite amazing. So you actually, and you mentioned Toastmasters earlier. So was that something you did as well to try and help you, or were you way past it at that stage?
Toastmasters was something I did later. What I did was when I left university, I went to work.
And were you still stuttering at this time, David?
I was stuttering a bit, yes. There was still a bit there. And if I was tired, I'd stutter.
Mm.
If I was a little anxious, I'd stutter. But one of my jobs, we had to go out and give speeches to various places. And so I started doing that. And that got me out of it. Because I suddenly realised, all those people out there, they're not going to get up and do it. They can't do it. They won't do it. I can. So I'm fine. So I almost had like this immunity.
Right.
Like I had a little shield. Like, well, okay, if you think I stuttered, well, you get up there and have
a
go.
Yeah, you do it better.
Yeah, you do a better job. And it worked. People wouldn't challenge me about it.
And did doing that constantly, that really helped? Did it help you build your confidence? Yeah,
it's been enormous help to me. I did have to have some speech therapy. I can't remember how many years ago, before I came to Waiheke, because I discovered that in getting over my stutter, I had developed some bad habits.
Right.
Speaking habits, that I cut words and did things because I didn't like certain sounds, so I'd cut them out, and a speech teacher fixed that for me.
Well, that's fantastic. I've got to say that I just think that's one of the bravest things I've heard, to as a young child and then as a teenager, force yourself to speak in public when you had that disability. I just think that's incredibly brave. I take my hat off to you, David.
It was desperate. You know, girls are a great motivator. And it was desperate. And I didn't know any other way, but I think somewhere there I've always been interested in words.
Right.
I mean, ask me to speak. I open the fridge and the light comes on and I can do a 5-minute speech straight away. I mean, try and shut me up. This, to me, working on the radio is a dream. Because when I was young, I stuttered, so I didn't think this was possible.
Absolutely.
So I'm just in seventh heaven. Anything to do with speaking, reading, people get me to read poetry at weddings, all sorts of things.
That's
I'm just
amazing.
As happy as anything doing it. It's just absolute joy for me.
That's fantastic. And what a triumph and a real inspiration for anybody that's out there listening who themselves is suffering from a stutter or a stammer, or indeed if their child is or is starting to develop that there is help. And of course there is actually structured help out there now. There's formalised help. Do you know anything about that? Have you looked at any of that with your research?
Yeah, I have. I don't think... I wouldn't say my way was the way for everybody, because that was just me. And I don't
know. And you're unique, David.
Yeah, of course. That's the one thing we've got in common. We're all unique.
Yeah, exactly.
There we are. Sometimes you can trip up. It's easy to do. There is a site that's called Start. It's start.co.nz. And Start is a therapy program.
Okay.
I think it's worth... They're a charitable trust. They will do what they can to help people afford the
treatment,
the therapy. I think you could ignore it and try not to concentrate on it, and it might go away.
Mm.
But they say the sooner you get the child to the therapy, the better it is.
So that it's better to address it rather than just keep your fingers crossed that they'll grow out of it naturally.
I would, if I had a child that was stuttering, I certainly wouldn't take, for me, wouldn't take the risk. It's not worth going through it.
Mm.
It's too hard for them. And it's a real struggle. I got very shy. I didn't like school. You know, I've not really got over the shyness. People don't believe me, but if you see me at a function, I'm the one that moves around the outside. I find it hard to mix, and I think it goes back to that time.
Right.
But put me behind a microphone or put me on stage.
I know.
I'm away.
There's no stopping you.
My ex-wife says it's just a different character. She's not even sure she knows them. She's not even sure she likes them. She said, because he comes off and his eyes are bright and he won't shut up. And I think that's it. My friends say because I've not been able to speak when I was young that I'm making up for it.
You're
now, and they can't shut
now.
Me up. But this program, Start, it's a charitable trust. They are very good. They'll take the myths away. You know, it's not due to... There's odd ones like tickling babies' feet.
Oh, really?
That won't produce a stutter.
No.
It's a good one, this one. Cutting a child's hair before they can speak.
You're kidding.
There's lots of old
tales. Okay, yeah.
Look at the trauma one. My family had it.
Mm.
People have to have an explanation. Nobody wants a child that's less than perfect.
Sure, of course.
You know, I can't blame people for that. It's really quite, and it's really worrying, and you feel embarrassed and you want to help them. And, you know, the worst thing you can do is correct what they say.
Right.
So that's the site to have a look at. And
excellent.
I would think that if you could get to the therapy, it does make a lot of difference. And I think schools are much better now than they used to be.
Yes, I would imagine that there are programs to help and support.
All I ever got at school was humiliation.
Oh, that's awful. But look at you now.
Oh.
Mr. Toastmaster, he's on the radio, all sorts of things. So you really are a story of success and self-taught success, really, from everything you've said. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me, David. It's been a really enjoyable conversation. And I'm sure that for people out there that are listening, that anybody that's suffering from that within their family or for themselves, that some of the advice you've given is really, really useful. So thank you. I really appreciate
that.
It's great.
Just one little plug, next Friday, 12:30, Out of the Blue, the program I co-host, Rocky Rhodes is doing a total program on stuttering, and there's about four of us who are going to come in and talk, even some people who are still stuttering,
wow.
How they cope.
Okay.
So it'll be about a three-quarter of an hour program about how we've overcome it.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thank you very much. So that's next Friday at 12:30, and is that show repeated at any point?
No, it isn't.
Not at the moment. Okay, so let's keep an ear out for that. Well, thanks very much for coming on, David. I've really enjoyed it. Now, we've got a surprise guest come into the studio today, and I'm very pleased to introduce Clyde Scott, artist, who's doing a... You're doing a residence here on the island, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. Yes, in the old eyesight building.
So come a little bit closer to that. That's perfect.
The old eyesight building?
In the old eyesight building. So,
yes. Good morning.
Good morning and welcome. I'm so glad you've come in. Because as you came in, actually a very funny little thing just happened. David, my last guest, was talking with Thomas, one of our radio extraordinaire hosts who does the rock show with us. They were chatting about music, just stood there while I was busy carrying on with the show. And Clyde walked up and they were talking about music. And Clyde, you said, have you heard of Grave Diggers Rock? And Dave was like, oh yes, I was playing it this morning and it's on my radio. Why is that? And he went, well, I sang it. And so you actually sang a song that he was listening to only this morning.
Yes, that's right.
Only on Waiheke, that's all I can say. So welcome, and tell us a little bit about yourself. You don't live on the island, or?
No, I live in Birkenhead.
Right, okay. So, and are you an artist full time? What sort of an artist?
I am now. Well, I'm a landscape artist primarily.
Right.
That's the thing that I'm concentrating on at the moment. And I'm doing a series of paintings based on Cook's original circumnavigation of New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, that provides me with just about the whole coastline to paint.
Mm.
So I'm selecting those parts of the coastline where he either charted them and named them, or where he anchored and where various events occurred. But in the main, I want to try and honour his original circumnavigation and the map, of course, that he produced, which was extraordinarily accurate and which sufficed for people for another 150 years before they started putting any detail onto it.
So is that right? So was the stuff that he did was particularly accurate?
Oh, yes,
he was very good.
It was. It was extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary.
Did he have a team with him, just out of interest?
Oh, yes, he did. He had
a team that helped him plot all of that.
Oh, yes. He would have had chart makers and artists to draw the coast.
Right.
Which is the particular aspect that I'm following in terms of the tradition that they had, where they would have artists that would draw the coast and they would go with the charts that they made, so that when they took everything back to England, you see, people would be able to recognise the sections of coast from the drawings
and be
able to relate them to the charts as they were mapped.
So as markers, so that they'd know exactly where they were.
They were profiles. They couldn't take photographs, of course, in those days, so they had to draw them.
That was the way they used to do it. So where are you, how come you're here? Tell us your story about coming to be on Waiheke and doing this residency for us.
Oh, well, I was invited here by John Daly Peoples, who is organising these sorts of events now for the New Auckland Council.
Great. Are you linked with the Waiheke Art Gallery at all? Or
I have exhibited there.
I thought so. Yeah.
And I've been in group shows and things with them. So that's been a linkage already established. And this particular one, John has been sort of aware of my work for quite some time. I've been exhibiting in Auckland since 1998, when I did my started this whole project.
Right.
I paint on kauri, kauri planks, which are shaped like old the strake patterns for clinker built dinghies. And so there's a nautical association between what I paint on and the actual coastal views as well.
Great. And how long, so if people want to come and see your work, have you got some examples that people can pop along and see?
Not really, no. The shortest of these are 2.7 metres and the longest are 4.7.
Oh my goodness.
The one I'm doing at the moment is 3.2. So it's not easy to fit a lot of those into one space.
No, it's not. Not and yourself and carry on working.
No,
but people can pop by and see the piece you're working on at the moment.
Oh, yes, indeed, yes. And they can come and look at it while I'm working. I work down one end and they can look at the other end.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. It's not very often an artist can say that, really, is it?
No, that's right. I'm colouring it at the moment. I've done that. I do it in three stages. I do a pencil drawing, very detailed, which is the type of thing that Cook's draftsman would have done very accurately, in order that it would obviously have particular relevance to sailors and to compass bearings and things like that. Those are all featured on my paintings as well.
So do you do that first? Do you draft it up on paper?
No, I draw it onto. I go out on a boat and take photographs of the sections of coast. that I'm doing, and then I come back and I transfer those photographs, make them up into panoramas, and then I transfer those onto the strakes, onto the wood, just by drawing. I grid it up like a map.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you freehand it or do you grid it?
No, I grid it up. Yeah. I freehand the drawing, but I grid it up first, and I establish the compass bearings on the actual wood, and I quarter it so that I'm working with a quarter of the section of the coast at a time, and I can control then the proportions of everything
of
and
course,
the relationship
yeah.
of everything. Mm. You know, headland to sort of to bay to island to, you know, whatever the features are that I'm in the landscape I'm doing.
Fantastic. Do you have a website that people, if people want to have a look at some of your work?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. The reason why I say that is because the dealer I was working with up until a couple of years ago, he retired. He had it on his website.
Right.
I don't think it now exists
okay.
anymore. Unless he's kept it up and is working from home, I don't know. But I'm not aware of that.
Right.
So I can't say that there is anywhere that I know of. I didn't even know I had a website, actually, until somebody Googled it up.
Ah,
and
I see.
Someone else had put it on. It was more in relation to the recordings in the student activity when I, back in, you know, because
back in
of
the
Recording Association,
right.
Somebody had done it from that side
oh,
of,
I see.
Of
right.
what I'd
so,
been doing.
So, yeah, I'm intrigued. Tell me a bit more about this student recording that you did.
Oh, well, I was... I was in a student's review in 1959 called Zaniopolis, and I did this Gravedigger's Rock as one of the numbers in the show. And in order to publicise the show, a couple of the guys in the administration of the review, they got together and they set up a recording company called Audion. And I was their first artist, and they produced this record on the basis that if they could get it on the air, it would then publicise and promote the student's review.
Right.
You see, so we recorded it. And
was this here in New Zealand?
Oh, yes. Yep, yeah. Oh, here yep. in Auckland.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And we recorded it, and then because of the fact that it had sort of certain wording in it, which was lyrics about, I was the grave digger in Hamlet. There was a Hamlet sketch,
yes, absolutely.
In the review, and so I was the gravedigger of that, and of course the song is about cadavers and bodies coming through the ply and all the sort of these allusions to dead bodies and skeletons and things, in those days that was considered to be too rich,
right.
for broadcast. So I was banned.
Oh, really?
But I was quite happy, actually, to be banned because it gave us a certain notoriety, of course.
Oh, yeah,
could
of course.
Promote, although it didn't get heard the way it should have, but we were sort of able to... They were able to promote it then as a banned record, you see, which, of course,
yeah.
gave it a certain...
Cachet.
And,
yeah,
and extra interest. But I was, you know, quite proud of the fact at the time because one of the other records that was banned... from broadcasting was Mac the Knife by Bobby Darin.
Oh, really?
So he and I were sort of linked in that regard. And oh, I mean,
fantastic.
That was, of course, a classic.
Yeah, oh, yes, I've played
drummer.
That a couple of
absolute
times, Mac the Knife on my show, actually.
Yeah.
But
you couldn't
like
hear
song.
It on radio in New Zealand when it first came out.
Wow.
And not for quite a few years.
Right.
So he and I were sort of consigned to the cupboard.
Excellent. But with that kind of... Yes, I actually sing on a band record. Yes, I'm so bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Oh,
yes,
fantastic.
Yeah.
So how would people like David, who was our guest previously, how would he have heard of you guys? What would... the notoriety from it being a band record?
Well, you know, quite a few records were sold and sort of in circulation.
Right, yeah.
And so, and every now and then I hear it played... these days on national radio when they do a, you know, sort of a look back
mm-hmm.
on, you know, early rock activity in New Zealand. And so it's been played a few times in those specialist programs.
Oh, fantastic.
So, you know, it's
very
extraordinary.
What an
every
interesting
now and then,
background.
Suddenly, you know,
yeah, you'll be driving along and hear your own record.
Oh, gasp. Wow.
Yeah, that must be so exciting.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is indeed.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And then to be walking around and bump into hearing somebody that was actually playing it only or listened to it only this morning.
Oh, it's absolutely. I think that's an extraordinary coincidence. I mean, I only mentioned it because, you know, the guy, what was his name?
David.
David seemed so sort of aware of records, and you know, and he was obviously somebody who was has a pretty deep knowledge of recording, and so I just mentioned it as a joke. Just said, "Have you heard of Gravedigger's Rock?" And he said, "Yes, I have." He said, "I was looking at that just this morning."
Right. Yes, and he's just passed me a note actually. He's just come back in the studio to hear this. Pie Cart Rock was the title of the CD.
Oh, that's right. Yes, it was on that compilation.
Yes,
that's right. That was about 4 years ago.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So once again, it was sort of a return to...
A resurgence, absolutely.
To sort of a earlier era and putting together a compilation like that.
Yeah.
Which is how it's appeared on the radio, you know, but with radio shows. So the guys talking about music on national radio and the history of it. So.
Fantastic. What an interesting life you've led, sir. Very interesting. And so getting back to your art... How long are you here on the island for?
Until Tuesday night, although I have a possibility of an extension if I haven't finished the painting. I've asked for that if it was possible, and if I hadn't finished it, because it takes a while to set it up.
Yes,
Something of that size.
Yeah.
And so when I'm sort of into the flow of it, I like to keep going until, you know, it's done. And it should be finished by Tuesday night, but if it's not, I think I've got an extra day.
Right, and is it going to be exhibited here in the gallery, or has anybody...
There hasn't been any arrangements made beyond the actual period that I'm here doing the work.
Right.
So whether that comes about, I can't say yet.
Right, okay. Oh, well, keep us informed. That would be really interesting. And if you're... So if anybody wants to pop along and see you up until Tuesday night, you're working in the old eyesight here in the Artworks Complex. Pop along and see Clyde.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Oh, well, listen, thank you so much for coming in. I'm really pleased that you did. It was lovely to talk to you. What an interesting story and interesting life you've led.
Well, that's... I only wish I
had Gravedigger's Rock. I tell you what, I'll play it for you next Thursday on my Anything Arty show. I'll get a copy off David and I'll play it for you.
Oh, wow. I'll have to make sure and listen. Because,
yes, absolutely.
That would be exciting.
Okay. Very all right. Exciting. Well, thank you very much for coming in. You get back to your art and I'm going to pop along later on and have a look at what you've done.
Okay. Well, I'm just next door, so...
Okay.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.